welcome into the Who's On podcast, part of the Sabre Podcast Network. As always, you can follow the Sabre.com all year long for the latest on features, analysis, and of course, the message board to cover the Wahoos from football, basketball to baseball season. Here today, we have John Blau covering Clemson for the Post and Courier. It's a big week down at Clemson, big week for Virginia going down there. Obviously, the big headline, Tony Elliott's return, but also got a lot of this stuff going on down there. CJ Spiller going into the Ring of Honor. I think your breast cancer, so cancer awareness game. So just a busy week as always down in Death Valley. How you doing, John?
Good. How are you, Preston?
Doing good. All right. Before we get into everything going on this week, just a couple weekly updates from Tony Elliott, his press conference this week. A couple injury updates. No updates on the depth chart at all. Just the status quo going forward. Receiver Trell Harris, he underwent surgery. He will miss a few games. Instead, a bone fragment came off in his knee, so that's why they're electing to have surgery now as opposed to a couple weeks ago. So Harris will miss the next few games now. Starting safety Antonio Clary fighting to return, according to Tony Elliott, but this game coming a little too soon for Clary. But good news, left tackle Mikhail Bolian, receivers Chris Tyrese, Darian Harrison all practice this week, so they are expected to play on Saturday against Clemson. All right, let's get into our press conference rewind. There's a lot of good sound bites this week, of course, with everything going on. Tony Elliott's return back down to Clemson, of the place he went to school there. He's a captain back in 2003 under Dabo Swinney, who was his position coach back then. But Tony Elliott, not a lot of time for all the noise this week. In fact, not even enough time for noise from his own family. So here's what Tony Elliott had to say in our latest press conference rewind.
I need to apologize to some family members, some folks that have reached out. They've called me. I have not answered. I have not called back. I eventually will get back to you. But yeah, it's been some requests and people wanting to talk. But man, I have a responsibility to this football team, this football program, to be laser focused. And that's one of the things that I learned from where I came from, is just how to block out the noise. So yeah, this is one of those weeks where some people are mad at me right now, but I promise you, I love you. I just need to focus.
John, I know everyone wants to talk about the return. Doesn't seem like Tony Elliott wants to. I found it interesting yesterday in that entire nearly 30-minute press conference, he never actually said the word Clemson once in his entire press conference. Just kind of how are you gauging kind of hit this not so emotional return, maybe emotional for Tony Elliott?
Yeah, I did note that he said the organization over there or the program over there. He kept Clemson out of his mouth. But yeah, it's interesting. Obviously, we're all going to ask questions about it because that's how he got to where he is now. I mean, he's being a great offensive coordinator, winning two national championships, all of that. It's interesting from a Clemson perspective because his last year wasn't really that good. I mean, it was kind of the year where they finally didn't go to the playoff. Started 4-3, DJ Uiagalelei, his struggles. And honestly, people were kind of down on Tony a little bit. And then he went to Virginia and kind of showed that he's still kind of a, you know, valued asset in college football. And so I think it's been good that it's been like a couple years that, you know, there's been a little bit of space. You know, there wasn't a lot of success after Tony either. And then it took getting Garrett Riley in a year under Garrett Riley. Now we're in year two. Finally, there's some success. So, I think that a lot of that kind of stink from like his last year at Clemson's kind of faded. And I think everybody kind of appreciates who Tony Elliott was and what he meant to Clemson. And so, yeah, it'll be a lot of emotions. I know that Tony doesn't want to think about it right now. And he's laser focused trying to keep Virginia in this game with a really good Clemson team. But there will certainly be emotions and things that he's going to be asked about after the game. And I'm sure he'll have things to talk about in terms of what that felt like. Cause it's going to be surreal for him for sure.
Yeah. It was really interesting. Just the timing of when Tony Elliott left Clemson, because, you know, obviously so many good years down there with the two national championships and kind of the rise of that Clemson program, he kind of left on a bad note, which is like, it was kind of just a weird timing. You know, he'd had opportunities to go. There's a lot of other jobs that had contacted him over the years. And Dabo Swinney talked about it during his press conference on Tuesday, but it was kind of the right job for him, he felt like, at that time. But it was interesting, the timing of when he left. Also interesting, just kind of the timing of when he got to Clemson. And it was interesting hearing kind of Dabo talk about, obviously, he had Tony Elliott as a player. And then Tony, obviously, we know all the story, went into engineering and then decided to get back into coaching, was at Furman, a couple other places. And finally, when Dabo was bringing him back into Clemson, it was coming off a 6-7 season for Dabo, and he's trying to fill a running back position. Here's Dabo Swinney talking about bringing back Tony Elliott in that moment.
Honestly, one of the greatest, coolest moments I've had as a coach was being able to sit at the kitchen counter, me and Kath and Tony and Tamika, and he had no idea that I was going to offer him a job. In fact, he thought because it was a running back's job that he couldn't get the job, and he thought, his time would come or something, this and that, and he just couldn't believe it. He couldn't believe it. And when he said, "Well, coach, I don't know anything about it," I said, "Well, we teach you all that." I said, "I'm not hiring you because you're a great running back coach. I'm hiring you because of who you are." And I said, "All that stuff, you've got everything you need."
John, I know you wrote about this story and kind of the relationship throughout the years. Just what do you make of kind of this relationship? It's a little more unique than just a former, head coach, assistant coach, and, head coach player because it was both.
Yeah, I mean, Tony Elliott was a captain, a senior in Dabo Swinney's first receiving room at Clemson. And I forget if it was Dabo or if it was Tony talking about like, it's my senior year and now I got this new guy coming in. What's that going to be like? But they obviously connected really well. Dabo's a guy who didn't have an easy childhood, grew up in poverty, drug use around him, had to kind of persevere through all that as a walk-on at Alabama. And then here's Tony Elliott, this guy who got hit by a truck when he was 4 years old, almost died. His mom dies when he's 9 years old in a car accident, had been through a lot of adversity himself. And I think Dabo and Tony kind of see a kinship there. And like you said, and you played the press conference clip, Tony did not expect to get the job in 2011. He's thinking, I just got re-upped at Furman. I'm not a running backs coach. He was prepared to go to Dabo's house and say, you shouldn't give this to me, give this to somebody else. I want to see you do well. Again, like you said, 6-7 in that 2010 season. But he says, no, I want you, Tony, because and Dabo said it on Sunday. I knew as soon as he gave up being an engineer, just the person he is, he's just a leader. I knew he was going to be a great coach and he was going to be a great head coach one day. And Dabo really does just think about people at that level in terms of who are they as people? What do they bring to the table that way? I don't care about the resume as much. We'll teach you to be a running backs coach. Taught him to be a running backs coach. Taught him to be an offensive coordinator. I mean, hired him in 2015 to do that job. He had never called a play in his life. And then they go to the national championship game and 4 and 5 years and win a couple of them. So, I mean, it's been a really, interesting journey for both of them in terms of how they've been intertwined. And, Tony obviously owes everything to Dabo in terms of just trusting him, believing in him, and allowing him to kind of grow into these roles. And obviously would have never gotten to Virginia without him. But again, it brings it back to the whole thing of, Tony's laser focused. He's not going to worry about that right now. He's got to try to win the game. But it is a very interesting relationship and timeline and story in terms of how the two of them are intertwined.
I feel like I learn something different every time, like we go into like Tony Elliott's past. It's two him and Dabo just have two of the more, I feel, interesting stories in college football and just kind of how they ended up in the places that they are now. I just finished writing a story for thesaber.com. It's up there now. You can go check it out on just how Tony Elliott has changed and adapted, because I think a lot of what UVA fans, grew weary of when he first got there, he was talking about Clemson a lot. And obviously, that's all he'd really known for the last decade plus was Clemson football and their rise and how they got to that point. And it was him kind of realizing the differences between Virginia and Clemson. What can you tell just from the outside looking in, just about kind of where he's taken this Virginia program compared to obviously the powerhouse and what has become the standard of the ACC down at Clemson?
Yeah, I mean, obviously that first year is as hard as any first year any coach is ever going to have. I mean, obviously to have tragedy like they did, losing three players in the middle of a season, having their last couple games canceled, to finish 3-7, that's hard for any coach. And obviously in those circumstances, incredibly hard. And so, obviously only win 3 games the next year. That's where you really find out how good of a coach are you. Like, do players stop believing? Do people, not really buy in, thinking this isn't going anywhere? And for them to kind of start off the way they've started off, to already have won 4 games, to be in a game with Louisville, easily could be 5-1. Dabo talked about that. I mean, this is a great testament to Tony Elliott in terms of not only kind of the wins, but the way they play. I mean, Dabo will say that, he often studies film and he says, when I see how hard a team plays, how physical they are, how much effort they give, I can tell that's a testament to their coach and how much buy-in there is. And Dabo Swinney sees that just from afar, is that there's a lot of buy-in. Obviously, you guys have a very dynamic quarterback and Anthony Calandria. Clemson's very concerned about how they're going to deal with him in terms of how he runs around and all the stuff he can do. But yeah, just a certain toughness, hard-nosed mentality that Virginia has that Dabo Swinney and Clemson has picked up just from watching from afar. Dabo credits that to Tony Elliott just because of the person he is and obviously trying to instill that. Which has obviously been a hallmark of Clemson. So just kind of again, I know that Tony wasn't even saying Clemson during his press conference, but a lot of what Virginia is becoming or will become is a testament to kind of the standard that Dabo Swinney set with his program and it kind of carrying over now to UVA.
All right, John, I want to get through all the off the field storylines before we get into the football coming up after the break. But real quick, just you talked about it there. Just kind of, it's good that this comes a couple years after Tony Elliott was there because his last season did not go well. The offense was kind of a mess with DJ Uiagalelei as the starting quarterback. What do you think the reception is now? How do you feel people remember Tony Elliott now as he gets ready to go back to Death Valley?
Yeah, I would be surprised if it wasn't very, very loud and enthusiastic when, when there's an opportunity to introduce him. I don't know what situation it will be. I don't know if they'll say
Yeah.
something over the
There's no
PA or if,
starting, no head
yeah, I
coach
mean,
announcement. Yeah.
yeah, I mean, if the team's running out, I'm sure there'll be a lot of boos because there always are. And so I know they're not booing him in that situation. But if there is an opportunity, I'm sure they'll be enthusiastic because again, they won two national championships in 3 years. The quarterbacks he coached, Deshaun Watson, Trevor Lawrence, the running backs he coached, Travis Etienne. I almost say, when I say Trevor and Travis right next to each other, I start to
It's
mix it
really
up,
confusing, yeah.
especially because Travis has a brother, Trevor, and
Yeah.
it gets really confusing. But yeah, so the players he's coached, the points they put up, I mean, they were prolific when Tony Elliott was there calling plays. And so, yeah, I think everybody remembers that. And to be honest, that 2021 season, I don't know what coach could have really done a better job. I mean, that offensive line was in shambles. All the receivers were hurt. DJ in his first year as a full-time starter, just very shaky, not confident. And they still managed after starting 4-3 to win six straight games and get 10 wins. So that was, I think it was 11 straight years. They ended up going 12 straight years with double-digit wins. So a lot of consistency there. Obviously, again, not the greatest year to end it, but I think if you really look at it with a full context, you see that, he probably did the best he could, and for the most part, they were incredibly consistent, and that obviously is a testament to the coach, the way he prepares his players and kind of his mind for the game. I mean, Tony Elliott, if anything, again, the ex-engineer is a very very smart guy, and so he knows his football, and he can game plan and get the most out of his guys.
It's definitely interesting looking back in hindsight, knowing kind of where DJ Uiagalelei's career has gone and what he's done at Florida State now, and also looking at kind of the problems that the Clemson had to fix offensively before. They've gotten back to, I would say, probably right now was kind of the best offense we've seen out of them since probably Trevor Lawrence was there.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back again, DJ obviously had an okay year at Oregon State, and then not quite working out at Florida State. You look at the offense, the receivers that were there, Frank Ladson, Ajoajo. These are guys who didn't really break out and have great college careers. I mean, there just wasn't a lot there. That there were a lot of misses recruiting wise that they were kind of working through at that point in time. And then yeah, it took Garrett Riley a good year plus because they weren't that great last year either. I mean, offensively, they were really up and down. Cade Klubnik made a ton of mistakes. The offensive line was good, but not great. There weren't enough receivers. They were all hurt. Antonio Williams being, the best of them, that was not available. But this year, yeah, they're humming. I mean, Garrett Riley has finally got that thing pointed in the right direction. The offensive line, coached by Matt Luke, the former Ole Miss head coach and Georgia offensive line coach. I mean, he's really gotten them playing at an elite level. Cade has all time, like all day back there. The receivers, Antonio Williams is healthy. You got these two freshmen, Brian Wesco and TJ Moore, that have really added to the depth of that room. And it's just like it's a completely different offense. But yeah, it took time. I mean, it took Garrett Riley coming in and really getting hands on with it, and Kate Klubnik having a full year as starter, and finally this thing has turned around. But it took a lot of work, and it took a lot of things changing in terms of personnel and also coaching.
Well, part of the one of those off a couple of those offenses was now UVA running back Kobe Pace, who will also make his return to Death Valley. It's interesting, coming into the season, Virginia had three former Clemson players. Now, Say Jennings, the tight end, he's out for the season with a knee injury, and Malcolm Green, the former defensive back, is already entered the transfer portal and will redshirt for the rest of the season. So it's just Kobe Pace coming back to Death Valley on Saturday. What have you made of him, and kind of he goes from a pretty crowded running back room there. Obviously, he was battling with Will Shipley, and then Phil Moffitt now comes in, and he's kind of, I think, reinvented himself. It took a while last year. He was kind of struggling to find momentum on the ground, but now he's averaging over 4 yards a carry, and it's kind of, put his name atop the depth chart for UVA. Kind of, what do you make of where Kobe Pace's career has gone?
It makes sense that now he's finally having some success. That his sophomore year, when he was, paired with Will Shipley, I mean, he was pretty much the number two back. I mean, Phil Moffitt was a guy they wanted to redshirt. They wanted to stagger the careers with Shipley and Moffitt, get more run out of Moffitt. There were a ton of departures. Lynn-Jay Dixon, Michael Dukes, a bunch of guys just left the room, and all of a sudden Moffitt gets in there with Pace, but it was still 1, 2, 3, Shipley, Pace, Moffitt. And then through, the years, Moffa kind of rose, and that kind of, limited Kobe Pace's run and his ability to kind of really get going. But he's a home run hitter. I mean, when he gets the ball, I mean, he absolutely has breakaway speed. I mean, he's a good running back, a good receiver. He's a guy that, yeah, can do it all. And obviously at Virginia, he's a guy who absolutely is going to be more featured. And so that's all he needed. Obviously, I know last year maybe it wasn't, quite as good probably as everybody wanted it to be, but kind of getting his feet back under him, I'm sure, after kind of the way it had been at Clemson. And obviously, Tony Elliott knows his strengths. I mean, he's a guy who would have played a role in terms of recruiting him and getting him to Clemson. So he knows kind of how to use him, how to kind of get the most out of him. And it's kind of been a perfect fit between, Kobe and his former coach, and again, being a more featured guy at Virginia, where he gets those opportunities to kind of get rolling.
And it was a crowded backfield last year. Obviously, they had a bunch of veteran guys in that running back room that they're trying to get snaps. At times, it was three to four guys. This year, it kind of just fits out well. You got Kobe Pace, a kind of bigger back, and kind of take a couple more carries. Then you have Xavier Brown who comes in and kind of changes the pace, kind of a little more. He can get loose, but it's funny because he's smaller, but he can really have guys bounce off of him in the run game. But we'll get more into the X's and O's and kind of looking at the football side of this coming up after the break here on the Who's On podcast. All right, welcome in to the Who's On podcast. Again, my guest is John Blau from the Post and Courier covering Clemson. And we're going to look a little bit more into Clemson now. This is Virginia's first time going to Death Valley since 2020. It'll be the first time that fans are actually in the building since 2009. So it was funny, Kobe Pace kind of prepping his teammates, told everyone to get your big boy pants on, because it's gonna be a different environment that Virginia's faced in a while. But what have you made of Clemson? I guess obviously they opened the year with the loss to Georgia. How much can you really take from a game against Georgia? But since then, they've won five straight, and they've outscored their opponents by at least 29 points a game since then.
Yeah, that Georgia game was just so weird because it was 6-0 at halftime. So it wasn't like Georgia just rolled on them to start and then just kept rolling. I mean, it really kind of really did pile up fast in that second half. Dabo Swinney will go back and tell you, and there was a wide open, Klubnik should have rolled out and hit Phil Mahfah in the flat. He could have gone 30 yards. He just dropped, he short-armed it. Mahfah doesn't catch it. They get no momentum, and they just can't really get going. So it was surprising, though, after that game, that 34-3 game against Georgia, they just exploded for 66 points. You're like, what the heck is this? Part of it was they started Brian Wesco Jr., the freshman, and Klubnik hit him immediately for like a 70-yard gain, like a huge touchdown. And it's just like, wow, they just had to play Brian Wesco, and now here we go, explosive offense. And so, yeah, I mean, this is what everybody thought they were going to be like coming into the year. That's why the Georgia game was so surprising. All you heard during camp was, this is the most explosive offense we've seen in years. I think Dabo Swinney said it's the most explosive they've been since 2019 in fall camp. That Cade Klubnik was this quote unquote executioner at quarterback, is what Tyler Venables, the safety, called him, not actually like hurting people, but just executing plays. And so, yeah, I mean, it's kind of what we expected. Again, a second year Garrett Riley, more experience at quarterback, at receiver, along the offensive line, a bell cow running back, and Phil Mahfah. And they've done it consistently now. I mean, 66 points against App State. Then you got another 40 something against NC State, 40 against Stanford. The Florida State game wasn't as clean as they wanted it to be. They kicked seven field goals, had two of them blocked. They easily could have scored 40 points there if they were better in the red zone. And then you put up another 40 spot on Wake Forest. And so it's been very, very consistent. Obviously, not the same level of competition that you saw against Georgia. But against teams that they're supposed to beat, they are doing what they're supposed to do for the most part. And so, yeah, I mean, it's called the dirt raid, is what Garrett Riley calls it, because it's run heavy. It's not just passing it all the time. But they really are stressing defenses with Phil Mahfah, even Cade Klubnik now more with his legs, getting defenses sucked in, and then over the top they got more vertical threats with Antonio Williams and Brian Wesco and TJ Moore. So it's a tough offense to handle when they're kind of executing and doing what they should do, and they have been doing for the most part this season what everybody expected them to be able to do.
You made the point there. Obviously, the competition, it's not Georgia every week, but is there still a question mark in your mind? Because you look at some of the teams, NC State, Stanford, Florida State, Wake Forest, none are really having a good season in the ACC right now. And obviously, good for Clemson for taking advantage of that and beating them by as much as they did. But is there a question mark in your mind just kind of looking at where they are? Obviously, you've got a couple, better teams coming up, Louisville. Virginia Tech's kind of been up and down, but still has some good players. Number 20 Pittsburgh. Are you still kind of wait and see mode with this team?
I don't know, because the amount of points that they're scoring and how comfortably they're doing it kind of gives you a feel that this is real, And part of it was, you go to Wake Forest and they don't score in the first quarter, and they looked kind of a little shaky, but then they overcame it. They didn't kind of, start to really, falter and question themselves and get really flustered. I mean, they went out and then they scored more points, and they scored, six straight touchdowns. So the way they're doing it, the ease in which they're doing it, Klubnik just looks so much more poised back there in terms of his decision making, in terms of feeling comfortable, and his feet aren't so busy trying to get every which way. Just seems more poised back there. Obviously, yeah, you can question it. I mean, it's going to be interesting, like you said, Virginia Tech, Pittsburgh on the road. If they end up playing a Miami in the ACC title game, those are going to be interesting games. But I think right now, I mean, the expectation, and a bunch of guys on offense even said it, that it used to be exciting for Clemson when they scored 40 points last year because they were never able to do it. Now it's an expectation, and if we don't score 40 points, we're disappointed in ourselves. There is kind of that reversion back to what Clemson used to be in terms of their expectation and their confidence. I don't, and I just don't see it, dying off anytime soon. You never know. Obviously, you could be surprised. Things could change, but it seems like they're very confident right now. They're playing confident, and they will continue to until somebody kind of knocks them off course.
It's interesting. You talked a lot about Cade Klubnik and the improvements that he's made. He's third in the ACC right now for quarterback rating. He's got 17 touchdown passes to two interceptions, just not making a lot of mistakes. And I think Haynes King is the only starting quarterback that has less interceptions in the ACC than Cade Klubnik right now. It's interesting just that the talk at the beginning of the season was, That quarterback class, you had Kay Klubnik and then Connor Weigman from Texas A&M, and neither were really panning out in their college careers, but Cade seemed to flip a switch. What do you think the key was to doing that?
I think again, just being more experienced, more mature, having another year in Garrett Riley's offense. Obviously, his first couple of years, different offense coordinators. I mean, he obviously got recruited by Tony Elliott, then had Brandon Streeter, and then Garrett Riley, and then trying to under fire with again this limited receiver core, a not as experienced offensive line as you would like in certain places. Try to, make things happen. And I think he even talked about that. I just tried oftentimes to go and try to win the game myself. And I mean, he would make some really silly mistakes last year. I mean, there was an RPO against Florida State in overtime that it was a third and one. You're just supposed to hand the ball off. He decided to throw like to the sideline, a completely covered receiver, gets smashed that fourth down. They don't get it. At Miami, he's supposed to just hand the ball off on a 2-point conversion. He decides to go run it himself to the edge. He just made a lot of really like nervous, just kind of spazzy type of decisions that he's not making anymore. I mean, he fumbled the ball 5 times last year. He has not lost a fumble yet this year. You talk about the 2 interceptions. I think part of it's physical too. I mean, he's 210 pounds now, and he was 200 last year. He's more physically mature. He's able to, he's got more contact balance. He seems more confident in terms of going to get those runs. And honestly, everybody obviously looks at quarterback. How are you throwing the ball? The way he's running the ball has really changed. Kind of how defenses have to play Clemson, because they can try to take away these vertical threats that he has now. But if you drop eight, I mean, he is running, and he is running for 20, 25 yards, and he's really hurting guys because he's got speed. He's a guy who ran the 200 meters in high school. I mean, he's a fast guy. And so the way he's doing that, and then that brings guys into the box, and then all of a sudden he's going over the top of you, and he's got man coverage, and he kind of again has a deeper receiving core where he can kind of pick a spot and who he thinks he can beat the easiest. So there's a lot of things that go into it, and obviously the offensive line again protecting him really well. He's just able to sit back there and has so much time. There's been a whole bunch of things that have just kind of combined to allow him to do what he's done. But I think just mainly maturity. More physically mature, more mentally mature, and he's just making better decisions.
And flip side right now, Virginia's quarterback Anthony Calandria. I got to hear Dabo Swinney during his press conference. He called him a problem. I know a reporter called him agent of chaos, which I like that term. But it's as of late, it's been a little less chaotic. It's been he hasn't thrown an interception in 3 games. Just what do you think of how Clemson kind of matches up against a quarterback like Anthony Calandria?
It's an interesting question because Clemson has at times over the years had trouble with mobile quarterbacks. I mean, it kind of gets them out of their, attack mode. It kind of puts them on their heels a little bit. Jordan Travis would do it to him every now and again. Ashton Daniels from Stanford a couple weeks ago, that was a little bit of a challenge, especially they came out running option football, which Clemson hadn't seen on film. A mobile quarterback can sometimes neutralize a very aggressive defense. So it'll be interesting to see how they fare. If they're able to get pressure on him, if they're able to make him kind of panic and make mistakes and get off balance and throw interceptions and things like that, I think that bodes well for Clemson. Obviously, they've been doing a good job, I would say, this season in terms of turning quarterbacks over and making them make bad decisions, especially because the run defense is so good. They put you in second and third and longs. But it is going to be something to watch. Is Clemson discipline in their rush lanes? Are they able to get there before he does a scramble drill and makes the cornerbacks? I think Dabo said he makes you cover forever, like forever and ever and ever, because he's gonna run around and he's gonna make a play downfield. So it's gonna be interesting to see if they play disciplined, if they cover as long as they need to, because yeah, Calandria, like you said, agent of chaos, problem, whatever you want to call him, it's definitely something you're going to have to deal with. That's not easy for sure.
All right, let's transition to predictions time for this game. Usually I call it, a matchup or key matchup to watch, but we're going with the new term, chink in the armor this week. What is one for Clemson, that maybe is as an avenue for Virginia to kind of get in this game, make it a game?
I heard Dabo Swinney really compliment Virginia's run defense. He thought they weren't that easy to run the ball against. And, Phil Mafah at times has really gone off, but there have been other times where Clemson has been really slow to get that run game going. And if Kay Klubnik and the offense is consistently in second and eight and second and nine, and they're not really gaining yards on first down, that's a chance to kind of, limit their ability to kind of matriculate the ball down the field, as one coach from the Kansas City Chiefs used to say. So it's yeah, I would say if Virginia can stop Clemson's run, really put it on Kate Klubnik's shoulders and the receivers to get open and convert second and third longs, I think that's a chance to kind of slow their momentum. If they cannot stop the run game, I really do not know how Virginia possibly stops this offense. So I would say that is the thing I'd really hone in on, is whether Virginia is able to limit Phil Mafah in the run game.
Yeah, it's been interesting. It's been a kind of week by week thing because last week against Louisville, obviously the Cardinals really well known for a high, floor passing attack. They're trying to go over the top of you. And the one thing Virginia's defense does not let you do is go over the top of you. They're keeping everything in front of them. And that's why, in the Boston College game, Thomas Castellanos, the quarterback for BC, was just able to kind of, pick, little 5 yard passes here and there and kind of work the ball up the field. Louisville didn't really have the patience for that, but luckily Isaac Brown, their freshman running back, was able to run, get some good running lanes. And part of that is due to, UVA not having their starting safety in Antonio Clary, because the way UVA's defense works, they try to funnel everything to those safeties to kind of come up and make the plays. And, when you got a sophomore out there in Caleb Hardy, he's not always in the right spot. So that'll be an interesting one to watch. For me, for Virginia, it's, the last game, finally, we saw kind of a weakness on the offensive line. A unit that's kind of been really down since Tony Elliott got there. But with the offensive tackles last game, they kind of showed a lot of, they're getting bull rushed. They're getting, guys going right by them. And so it'd be interesting to see just against this Clemson defensive line if they can keep guys out of the backfield. Because one thing you mentioned, Calandria keeps the play going forever. That can also have negative effects because it allows that pass rush to kind of get back into the backfield. And so I would say about half of the sacks this year have been kind of Calandria's fault more so than the offensive line. So if Clemson can kind of take advantage of these defensive or these offensive tackles like Louisville did, then it could be a long day offensively. All right, player to watch now for both sides. For who do you have for Clemson? That's kind of the guy to watch for this game.
That's an interesting one. Let me say, I'm going to say Brian Wesco Jr., the freshman receiver. He was out last week. I think they're optimistic that he'll be back. If he's back, again, you talk about keeping things in front of you. Can you keep Brian Wesco Jr., who is an incredibly fast, quick receiver who can get over the top really, really fast, in front of you? That will be interesting to see. And if they, if they do, still, that's going to push the secondary back, and there's a guy like Jake Bringstool underneath, Troy Stilato, a lot of these other guys who can make plays, Antonio Williams. So I am interested, I guess, a player to watch in warmups to see if Brian Wesco Jr. will be there, and then if he is, how that kind of affects the game and changes Clemson's offense, and also how Virginia's defense has to play him.
Yeah, Virginia's faced a couple of good receivers. I know Ja'Cory Brooks from Louisville was good, and he never really got over the top. He did have a 61-yard catch, but that was mostly on the run. Maryland had a good receiver too, but really no one's gotten over the top. But again, you're not talking about the same kind of speed that a guy like Brian Wesco brings to the game. We talked about him so much, but my player to watch is Anthony Calandria. This is only his third game against a ranked opponent in his career, and it's on the road against a number 10 team. And he's only started two of those team games against ranked opponents. The last one was against Louisville on the road last year, where he put up a really good fight, and they almost came away with a road win at Louisville last season. So interested to see just kind of how he handles that environment. He's gone three straight games without turnovers now. I know Tony Elliott, every time he hears that, he's got to knock on wood or something because he doesn't want to jinx the quarterback. And so can he continue that against this Clemson defense? That'll be something to watch. All right, predictions time. It's everyone's favorite time. Clemson comes into this one favored by 21 and a half points. They've outscored, like I said earlier, in their last five games, their opponents by 29 points. Virginia, in their two losses this year, they haven't really gotten blown out yet. It'd be interesting to see, kind of how this one goes. I'm going to say that they cover in this one, and I'll go a 38-31 Clemson win. But I'm going to say they cover and make it at least interesting, maybe add a late touchdown on.
Yeah, I'll go 40-20. Yeah, it's just, probably bias on my part from what I've seen of Clemson and just expecting them to continue to do that. But I think Virginia, again, decent offense, a guy who can make some plays in Calandria. 20 points would be a good amount, from what I've seen lately. And so it'll be interesting to see if they can play up to that. But yeah, it's just I've seen so many 40-point games. I'm expecting Clemson to get there. And yeah, I don't expect many more than 20 points given up by that defense just because they got a lot of dudes up front.
Yeah, no, I think it's a safe bet. We'll see what happens. I mean, it'll be interesting just because of all the, narrative around the game, and just for Virginia kind of going into an environment like that. They haven't played each other a lot. That's just the nature of the ACC. They played Wake Forest earlier this year, hadn't played Wake Forest a lot either. So it's a lot of, especially with the not going to as big a conference as it is now, no divisions. You're seeing a lot more of these matchups more frequently, and I think it's good for the league just to kind of get around a little bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's going to be weird for Clemson. I mean, they don't play NC State next year. They don't play some of these traditional rivals that they usually play every year. I don't think they're going to play Wake Forest for a couple of years now. So, yeah, bringing those SMUs and Cals and Stanfords in the league has kind of changed things. But yeah, it's good for Clemson to finally get around and play a Tony Elliott and obviously see him again at some point and kind of build that rivalry a little bit between Dabo and him.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. All right, John, I want to thank you for joining the Who's On podcast today. Good luck this weekend, and we will see y'all next week here on the Who's On podcast.